with a compelling perspective on global politics. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Patrick Henningsen Show with me, Basil Valentine, sitting in for Patrick. Today, Friday the 26th of April 2024, we've got another action-packed, extremely informative, highly enlightening and educational program for you, as you would expect here on TNT. In the first hour, I will be joined by the academic and campaigner, Tony Greenstein. Tony is a well-known Jewish anti-Zionist and a founding member of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, a long-standing anti-fascist activist and author of A History of Fighting Fascism in Brighton and the South Coast. Tony has written for many publications, including The Guardian's comment column and Al Jazeera. In the second hour, I'll be joined by Mike Berry, former director of America First. And after that, our intrepid investigative reporter, Christian James, will give us the latest on his diggings in the netherworld of the news cycle. But first, unfortunately, it is our solemn duty to turn once again to the dreadful events unfolding in the Middle East. 14 years, yes, that's how long it could take to clear the Gaza Strip of rubble and unexploded bombs. A vast amount of rubble includes unexploded ordnance left by the bombardments, and Per Lodhammer, senior officer at the United Nations Mine Action Service, told a briefing at the Geneva headquarters of the United Nations today that the war has left an estimated 37 million tons of debris in the widely urbanized, densely populated territory. He said that although it's impossible to determine the exact number of unexploded ordnance found in Gaza, it's projected that it could take up to 14 years to clear the debris, including rubble, from destroyed buildings. We know that typically there's a failure rate of at least 10% of land service ammunition that's fired and fails to function. So in other words, of the thousands of shells that have rained down on Gaza, hundreds at least are still unexploded. We're talking about 14 years of work with 100 trucks. And that's if it starts now. Meanwhile, of course, the mass graves continue to be ignored largely by the corporate media, evidence of war crimes and atrocities, which would be splashed all over the front pages for days were they happening virtually anywhere else in the world. And were they happening, of course, in Eastern Europe, should the Russians be guilty of such a thing, not that I think they would, you could be sure we would hear the screaming from the Security Council, from the White House, from Westminster, from Brussels, and everywhere else about the inhumanity of the Russians, how they must be sanctioned, isolated, if not confronted militarily. But for some reason, we don't get the same condemnation with Israel. But that isn't stopping protesters taking to the streets and campuses all over America. Interestingly enough, that story too is being minimized. These are surely the most powerful, numerous and vociferous anti-war demonstrations since the early 1970s. In fact, they quite possibly outnumber them. And, well, what's really happening is that the US Constitution is being shredded on behalf of Israel. Freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, they seem to mean absolutely nothing. One of the most egregious examples was at Emory University in Georgia, where two members of faculty, including Caroline Folin, a sexagenarian, 65-year-old economics professor, and interestingly enough, the wife of the Dean of Admissions, was body slammed to the floor, George Floyd style, a use of excessive force. Fortunately, the images were captured by somebody on their smartphone and posted on the X platform, as we can see now in clip one. Yes, it seems that wherever Zionism goes, violence follows soon afterwards. Worth remembering that a lot of American police forces had training with the Israelis. I'm not sure if that's still ongoing, but that was quite a scandal a few years ago. Why on earth would American police forces need training by Israelis in specifically riot control and dealing with dissidents like elderly economics professors? These are the great and the good of American liberal academia. So perhaps, just perhaps, the message might finally be getting through. I thought it was interesting there, too, that you could hear a fellow protester, probably a student, describing the baton-wielding thugs as fascists. And indeed they are. But that is precisely what Benjamin Netanyahu has been calling the campers, the protesters. He has likened those holding their entirely peaceful demonstrations to Germany in the 1930s. A truly absurd comparison, but one that was echoed by the idiotic Tom Cotton, who described it as a nascent pogrom. How ridiculous can you get? It was a similar story at Ohio State, as we can see now in clip two.
Media.
And before we go any further, I think it's worth reminding ourselves what it is exactly the protesters are so concerned about, because there's been an awful lot of noise about a lot of these people being somehow anti-Semitic, even though an awful lot of them are Jewish. That doesn't seem to cut any ice. But here is one of the Palestinian civil defense discussing the discovery of the mass graves, which should be the headline news all week. Here it is in clip three.
We also found the bodies of a number of children, and here we have questions. We would like to know what is the reason why we have children in mass graves. This shows and proves that the occupation is still leading a war of genocide, where over 14,000 children were killed. So roughly 40% of the total number of martyrs in the Gaza Strip are children. We also noted that some of the bodies, their hands were tied using belts, using fabric, and this also shows that some of the civilians were subjected to torture by Israeli occupation soldiers. We also found the bodies of children. This child is no more than 15 years old, and this body was recovered from these mass graves, and this once again shows that the Israeli occupation is still committing atrocities against children.
I'm sorry to say, really is the tip of the iceberg. People have been found with their hands zipped behind their backs, patients with cannulas dumped in the graves, evidence of some of them having been buried alive. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, I'll be discussing this and also the truth, lies and propaganda of what's going on in the Middle East with my esteemed guest, the academic and campaigner, Tony Greenstein. We'll be right back after this short break.
Sonia Poulton.
They were talking about the new report that a generation of children will fail at school and in exams as a consequence of lockdown. Susanna said, "I feel we failed our children." And the others nodded in unison. But no, wait a minute, Susanna. We did not fail our children. We, i.e. people like me, we campaigned and protested. We petitioned, we shouted, we podcasted, we made endless social media posts, and we said very, very loudly and repeatedly that we are deeply, deeply concerned with the lockdown measures being applied to everyone, including children. And you, Miss Reid, and the rest of legacy media just kept ramping up the pressure day in and day out.
Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
About to hear
today's News Talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
Today's News Talk, TNT.
Back to the program, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by now Tony Greenstein, the author, academic, and all-round good egg who has the badge of honor of having been expelled from the Labour Party, which I think indicates somebody of integrity and honor. Tony, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I can't see how anybody could possibly stay in the Labour Party in the present circumstances. It's done a complete 180 from the Corbyn position. I'm sure you can remember all the flags waving. I think it was in Brighton, the Palestinian flags waving five or six years ago. It was in Liverpool, was it?
It was, yes.
At the conference, and I, for one, thought, oh, wow, something's actually happening here. It's quite obvious that the Zionists saw all that and decided they better do something about it. And so a systematic campaign was waged, not only to destroy Jeremy Corbyn, but basically to turn the Labour Party around and point it in completely the opposite direction.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, by that time, I'd already been expelled. That was September 2018, and I was expelled in the February, although I was caught up in the fake anti-Semitism witch hunt, which, of course, was not about anti-Semitism, but Israel and Zionism. But I was the first Jewish person to be expelled. But I have to say, I wasn't the last person to be expelled who was Jewish. And today, Keir Starmer's campaign to root out anti-Semitism means that if you're Jewish, you're about five times more likely to be expelled.
It really is extraordinary that in the British Labour Party, you've got Gentiles expelling Jews for anti-Semitism. Now on college campuses across the United States, you've got Gentile police, Gentile thugs arresting Jewish protesters, supposedly once again for anti-Semitism. Certainly that's what they're being, that's the smear that they're trying to attach to them, you know, in the mainstream media. It really is abysmal, and I'm surprised it's still flying, Tony.
Well, not only in the United States, but in Germany, one third of Palestine solidarity activists who are arrested are Jews or Jewish. But I mean, let's be clear, this is nothing to do with being Jewish. Joe Biden and the Christian Zionists don't support Israel because they love Jews. They support Israel because they love their own multinationals and the oil profits and the coercion and destabilization that Israel has brought to the region and their relationships with the client Arab regime. So Jews really are just a moral alibi, nothing more. If, as Biden said, if Israel didn't exist, it would have to be invented. Jews are just the alibi. They're very convenient because they can pretend that what they're doing is for a good cause, that is fighting anti-Semitism. But we know that they're no more concerned about genuine anti-Semitism than any other form of racism. So it's not surprising that Jews are in the forefront of the campaign and that they are being targeted over and above anyone else, because they really hate anyone who calls into question their identity politics. I mean, that's what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Joe Biden there. He, of course, actually spoke out in favour of the Israeli commando raid on the Freedom Flotilla in 2010. He defended Israel on that occasion. So he's got form, has Genocide Joe. I spoke last night to Dr. Frank Romano, who hopefully today, I haven't heard from him in the last couple of hours, is boarding one of the boats to sail to Gaza again. There's every chance that that will be intercepted by the Israeli Navy. The only reason why it's needed in the first place, or one of the main reasons, of course, was the suspension of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency funding, which happened with the drop of a hammer an hour after the International Court of Justice ruling that there was a plausible case for genocide, with Germany, United States, Britain, and several other countries in seemingly a coordinated response, response that must have been, says Craig Murray in an important article today on his Substack, a response that must have been coordinated and determined in advance of those Israeli claims.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it was a warning to the International Court and to anyone who was thinking of enforcing international law that the powers that be would plough on regardless, that they were going to take absolutely no notice of any notions of international law, the European or the UN Human Rights Conventions or anything else. They were going to support Israel to the bitter end. And that meant a means genocide in Gaza. So, of course, it must have been coordinated and it was done at a drop of a hat without any evidence whatsoever.
Here we are, fully 3 months on from that, and Catherine Colonna, the former French foreign minister, has reported to say there is still no evidence. Germany have restored the funding, but the United States don't plan to do so for years. So, well, you know, in that context, surely with all the noise we hear from the likes of David Cameron and Keir Starmer and David Lammy about the importance of getting more aid into Gaza, surely they should be behind the Freedom Flotilla. They should be championing that sailing. They should be putting pressure on the Israelis to allow them to dock and unload. Yet we hear nothing. Well, we hear nothing. That's simple as that. Radio silence from government and media.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the reality is that whatever Israel wants to do and is doing, the Western powers and Biden and Sunak's David Cameron above all will support them. Whatever they say, well, however much they wring their hands in public, we should judge them by their actions. And their actions are they're continuing to pump the weapons in, and there's been a big new aid package from America. And what's our aid package for? It's attacking Palestinian civilians, because that's what Israel's been doing. It's demolished every single aspect of civilian infrastructure in Gaza, the hospitals, nearly every hospital, some with mass graves, Al-Shifa, Al-Nasser, every university has been razed, every school virtually, mosques, the world's third oldest church, St. Porphyrius, you name it. Today they're attacking agricultural fields. Is this where they think they're attacking Hamas? No, of course not. Hamas is the pretext, just like Nasser was the new Hitler, just like so many others of Israel's foes were new Hitlers, because they weaponized the Holocaust in order to justify what is a nakedly aggressive settler colonial state. It is really that simple. And unfortunately, people have been guilt tripped over it. And you see the German state above all. It makes its peace with the Holocaust by supporting Israel's Holocaust. That's a reality. It comes to terms with it. It relativizes it. It makes it feel better about what it's done, because it can now support what it terms Jews doing the same. So none of it, this is a surprise. And that is why I wrote my book on Zionism during the Holocaust, because people really do need to know what the Zionist attitude was during the Holocaust. And it was basically they didn't want to know.
You mentioned there the mass graves at Al-Shifa and Nasser hospitals. This story broke last weekend, and indeed more corpses are still being discovered with evidence of people buried alive, patients murdered, medical staff murdered, executed in cold blood. We're hearing talk of calls for an independent investigation. I mean, apart from the fact it's pretty obvious what has happened, and an investigation would merely kick it into the long grass, the Israelis are currently refusing an independent investigation. And absurdly, White House spokesmen are saying, we want the Israelis to investigate themselves.
Well, yeah, it's logical that if someone commits a murder, you also ask them to investigate their own crime. I mean, they, after all, they better than anyone know what they've done. I mean, that's the logic, isn't it? So you really can now abolish the police, because all you need to do is ask criminals to investigate their own crimes, and you'll save such a lot of money. I mean, this really is their logic, to get Israel to investigate its own crime. Did we ask Nazi Germany to investigate its crimes? I mean, merely to put forward the suggestion shows how absurd it is. But that really does show that the whole architecture erected post-war of international law, the international court, and then the International Criminal Court, and so on, the European Court of Human Rights, it's all collapsed. It's all meaningless, because those who are determined to destroy the world will not let anything stand in their way. And that has really massive implications for the survival of this planet, because there is nothing to control rapacious capitalism and imperialism. It will do whatever it takes to get its own way. And it can only end in the end in another world war, which may be the end of civilization as we know it.
Either another world war or all of us under the yoke of some kind of authoritarian fascism with severe restrictions on free speech. It strikes me as extraordinary how quickly the American Constitution has been shredded on Netanyahu's orders. So it seems.
I wouldn't say that it was on Netanyahu's orders. I mean, there's always a mistake. People who think that Israel controls the agenda of what's happening in the United States. The United States could stop Netanyahu doing what he does in a flash. Israel didn't have the weaponry. It didn't have the stocks. Biden supplied them and kept supplying them. And I think we need to bear that in mind. The United States is the primary responsible power for what Israel does. Israel is its attack dog, so it's not going to give it a good kicking unless it's absolutely forced to. But we shouldn't shift the blame onto, if you like, Israel. I mean, obviously Israel's the immediate culprit. There's no doubt about that. But those who are responsible sit in the Congress and the Senate and the House of Representatives and the White House. They're the ones who give Netanyahu the means of doing what he does, who fund him, who subsidize him, who defend him at the UN Security Council. And I think it's important to do that, because if we thought that Netanyahu was the one in charge, then we would have a problem. But actually, you could stop him at a stroke. If the Arab regime stopped the oil tomorrow, Gaza would stop the day after. It's because of the cowardly nature of those repressive, corrupt regimes that Israel is able to do what it does as well. So, I mean, Israel is not that strong. I mean, we saw that. I mean, the Hamas broke out of the ghetto very easily. It cut like a knife through butter through the Gaza division. If anything, they were so surprised, they didn't actually know what to do in the kibbutzim and that, because it was so easy. The Israeli army is not very good at fighting, you know, when on a one-to-one basis. We saw that in Lebanon in 2006. They entered one day and rapidly retreated when they were confronted by hardened Hezbollah guerrillas. And the same in Gaza. I mean, the resistance has put up a magnificent fight, which we don't hear about, of course, on the mainstream news. Nothing is happening as far as they're concerned. But Israel's taken a battering nonetheless. But it couldn't do what it does if not for the West. In that sense, we have the power to stop it.
Indeed, we do. I agree. And the problem, well, amongst the many problems we've got, is that a lot of the extremist rhetoric from Tel Aviv, the dehumanization of Palestinians, the identification of all Palestinians as terrorists, apparently the instructions to the IDF have been to treat everybody as a terrorist of any age, and that they have to prove otherwise, in other words, prove that they're not a terrorist in order to be spared a bullet in their head. And disgracefully, that position is shared by a lot of people on Capitol Hill. The decades of malfeasance by the lobby have meant that they've got a lot of idiotic poodles, for want of a better expression, like Tom Cotton, like Representative Byron Mast. There are dozens of them in Capitol Hill, who, although they don't say it out loud, although they don't necessarily use exactly the same language as the likes of Ben-Gavir, essentially, they're in the same camp.
I mean, again, I wouldn't use the term poodles. They know very well what they're doing. I mean, Tom Cotton and one or two others, the Florida senator, I think, one of them, they've spoken openly of finishing it off, wiping them out. I mean, this is not unusual. I mean, America itself was established by the extermination of the native Indians. In Iraq, they killed, what, 500,000 to 1,000,000? I mean, wherever the United States has gone, British imperialism before it, it wiped out peoples without a second thought. Nothing Israel is doing today is what we, the West, have not done in the past. And therefore, there is this identification and this same racism. Palestinians are human animals. You know, the same phrase that Himmler used about the Jews, incidentally. Really is nothing new under the sun. It's all happened before. And so, again, the only difference this time is we're seeing the genocide in real time, whereas we've never seen this before. And that's what is so remarkable. And that's what's generating, of course, the vast protests. I mean, the Zionists are screaming blue murder. Asis Sunak and Cameron and others in Britain about mobs of terror. You know, they can't stand 1,000,000 people demonstrating every other week in London. They're calling to crack down. I mean, these people do not believe in democracy when it comes to it. Whatever paeans of praise they will give for democracy in theory, when it comes to practice, democracy is not something they like very much. And that's one of the lessons we have to learn.
Absolutely. They don't mind a plebiscite every 5 years where they have monopoly over the media and get re-elected, but they don't like the wider aspects of democracy. They don't like people power. They don't like demonstrations. Go on.
I mean, you know, I was going to say that in this country, I don't know whether you heard about it, because you're what, in the United States, I presume?
No, I'm not. I'm in the UK, in spite of the background. Yeah.
Is it? Oh, right. I didn't know. But well, when Galloway was elected in Rochdale in a by-election, what happened was little Rishi Sunak dashes out of Downing Street to froth at the mouth about mobs of terror and a terrible day this is, and say that the police should start policing demonstrations. In other words, stopping them, attacking the demonstrators or whatever have you. I mean, that's the pathetic nature of the calibre of our politicians today. They fear the mob. I mean, Braverman went so over the top, she accused the police of being pro-Palestinian and was sacked for good measure. But, I mean, our rulers fear genuine democracy. They fear their own citizens. The tragedy is that people in this country have been so reluctant to take up arms, if you like, against those who rule them. They've been mystified and depoliticized by the billionaire yellow press that feeds them with the same nonsense.
Yes, exactly. That Sunak speech was really off the charts. He came out basically said that the election of Galloway in a free and fair election in Rochdale, where he was the preferred candidate of the people, was somehow a threat to democracy. In other words, he was basically saying elections are a threat to democracy if I don't like the way people vote. I mean, it was so naked. But you're right, they're extremely unhappy about what's going on in central London. And there's this concerted attempt by Zionists to mischaracterize what's going on. Over the last week, we've had the example of Stephen Falter. Gideon Falter, sorry. Unable to cross the road. What a joke, you know. Claiming at least he was being prevented from crossing the road by a police officer who dared to say he was openly Jewish because he was wearing a kippah. And this took up all the oxygen in the media space. Meanwhile, the bodies of children being buried alive were being discovered to stony silence. It was absolutely off the charts stuff, Tony.
Well, it was. Although, to be fair, the story that Falter put out unraveled as the Sky News video emerged, the longer video, and it was clear that Falter and his security detail, provided by Israel, no doubt, were not trying to cross the road, were not trying to get to a certain place, but were trying to walk into the march to physically disrupt it, cause some provocation, and then they would be able to say or cry anti-Semitism. Whereas literally down the road were five survivors of the Holocaust, including Stephen Kapos, who was as a child hid in Budapest as the Nazi and the Arrow Cross mobs tried to locate Jews, was openly protesting in support. But part of the problem, of course, has been that when they cry anti-Semitism and say they're a threat to Jews, every Saturday there's a Jewish block of 1,000 and thousands more Jews are actually marching. So being Jewish is no problem in the march. Quite the contrary. I mean, with the first march I went to, I remember a group of Muslim women in hijabs and so on jumping up and down and shouting, Judaism, yes, Zionism, no. I mean, they understood it very clearly. But the media is deliberately politically blind. Of course, they're not anti-Jewish. They're anti-genocide. And if you say they're anti-Jewish, what you're doing is associating genocide with Jews. And to me, that is anti-Semitic.
Oh, yeah, that's the irony of it. We've actually got a clip of Stephen Kapos speaking to camera at one of the recent demonstrations. So let's hear that now.
The greatest crime is the murder of over 10,000 children. With that fact, all arguments stop, in my opinion. This is intolerable. My name is Stephen Kapos, and I'm a child survivor of the Holocaust in Budapest, Hungary. I was 7 years old in 1944. 15 members of my family, extended family, had died in Auschwitz. We had to relocate a number of times because we were bombed out and because the fighting was just too dangerous. And when I watch what goes on in Gaza, it actually rhymes very strongly with my own experience. I am completely shocked and disgusted by the Israeli state for carrying out these genocidal acts. I have experienced almost every one of the big demos. Consistently, whenever people realize that I am a Holocaust survivor or just Jewish, I have the warmest response. It's quite moving. People break off from the line and to shake our hands and hug us. And this gives a complete lie to the right-wing propaganda that these are no-go areas for Jews or dangerous areas for Jews. The very opposite is true. We are making the point that we dissociate from the acts of the Israeli government. Not in our name is the message. Altogether, this is an extremely powerful movement. It's persistent. It's not going to go away. And I think eventually this is irresistible. We hope that there will be eventually a positive outcome and Palestine will be liberated.
Even Papa speaking. Definitely. Yeah, exactly, Tony. Now, I've no doubt he'll be at the march again tomorrow if he's able to be there. There's another big one in London. And I've no doubt that once again he will be ignored by the corporate media, who are only too eager to amplify nonsense from the likes of Rachel Riley and others about central London somehow being a no-go area for Jews. I don't think this is simply disingenuous. I think there's something really very sinister about this, to be perfectly honest.
Well, it's certainly not an innocent oversight. That much is sure. If Stephen Kapos was saying the opposite, you can be sure he'd be on the front page of every newspaper. Because his message is contrary to the received wisdom, therefore he is ignored. I mean, I know Stephen personally, and he's a fine, upstanding, moral person in everything he does and says. He has used his experiences as a child when his life was in danger to speak out for those who are victims of Zionism, whose own lives are in danger. But yes, it's our prostitute press, in essence. They say only what their owners will allow them to say. They're paid to speak to propagandize lies because they're owned by a few billionaires whose interests coincide with Israel and the United States imperialism and British imperialism, which is in hock to the United States, never has been since 1956 after the collapse at Suez. British imperialism knew that it had to march in step with the United States. It couldn't pursue an independent foreign policy. So whatever Biden does, Cameron does. I mean, that's the sad reality of it. So we see the resumption of arms to Israel almost immediately after the aid workers were killed, including three British citizens, incidentally.
Were quite possibly killed by weapons partly made in Britain. Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary stuff, frankly, that even at this stage, with at least 45,000 people having been murdered, scores of others mutilated. This is what gets me. The entire population have been traumatized beyond belief, with more trauma yet to come. The latest is that they're going to be herded out of Rafah and into tents. You know, the arrogance of the Israelis with regards to all this, I find just frankly...
Yeah, it's beyond belief. I mean, what right is Israel to even be in Gaza? What right is it to stop anything coming in and coming out? The fact that Israel retains to itself these rights, which have no basis in international law, just shows we live in a lawless society, in a lawless world, presided over by the United States. The only rationale for it is that might is right. There is no other. There is nothing moral. Everywhere the United States goes, it causes war and turmoil. the United States destabilizes every democratic regime that's ever been in the world. It can't stand democracy because then people question where it gets its wealth from. So it's a vicious circle, and we're seeing that play out in Gaza. And unfortunately, the Arab regimes are absolutely complicit, especially the Egyptian regime and what is happening. The only regimes which have been independent, well, the Houthis have been magnificent, and the Iranians to a lesser extent. But apart from that, they've all been one way or the other complicit. And they could stop it. If they stop the oil, the West would have to stop Israel. It's as simple as that.
I'm joined by Tony Greenstein here on the Patrick Henningsen Show today, Friday, the 26th of April. We're going to take a short break now with the network. When we come back, we'll be looking at the green shoots amongst all this horror, and that is the turning of the tide in public opinion on both sides of the Atlantic, which may indeed presage the end of the Zionist project. We'll be right back after this short break.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine. Dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school. Hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about Canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Except you're with Basil Valentine sitting in for Patrick Henningsen today, Friday the 26th of April. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by the academic and campaigner Tony Greenstein. I'm looking at a list here, 47 US college encampments, Michigan, New Mexico, Texas, Indiana, Harvard, MIT, Ohio State, Yale, Berkeley, Columbia, Brown, Stanford, all the big ones, all the great and the good. And there have been encampments at all of them, most of them ongoing, much to the fury of the Zionists. It all started at Columbia University, where students set up a camp on the college grounds, on the common ground, and called for the university to divest from all investments to do with Israel. This prompted Robert Kraft to withdraw his funding, the owner of the New Patriots, an ardent Zionist. It really has got the wider Zionist power configuration that has bought its way into American academia up in arms. And of course, the attempt is to portray all these protesters as somehow out of nowhere. They've all developed this sort of irrational, weird hatred of all Jewish people, Tony. Nothing to do with anything that's going on in the Middle East. Of course not. It's all a total nonsense. And there was a clip here that sort of demonstrates just how isolated the Zionists are. If we can play it, I believe this is from Columbia University, and this is clip number 4.
Afraid. What
So a lone genocide supporter there. You saw the Jews Against Genocide banner in the background being largely ignored, or completely ignored, by the entirely peaceful protesters, drumming, dancing, quite a festival atmosphere, really. And yet, Speaker Mike Johnson went to Columbia and made a speech, I mean, he was booed, at which he said Jewish students were in fear of their lives.
Of course, I mean, that's their narrative. I mean, you're talking about Boris Johnson.
No, Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Ah, right, yes. I mean, of course. I mean, as I said before, Jews are the moral alibi. It's like India. When Britain went into India, it did it to stop Hindu wives being burnt on the funeral pyres of their husbands, called sati. It was nothing to do with exploitation of the Indian peasants and so forth. It was from moral, noble motives. The empire was the white man's burden. The same here. They're not using riot police to club students because they like repression and because they're defending vested interests. It's because of concern with anti-Semitism. The fact that 15 out of the 80 students at Columbia who were arrested were Jewish is beside the point, because if you're anti-Zionist and a Jew, you're invisible. You're the wrong sort of Jew. So, you know, we can see through this hypocrisy, and a growing proportion of Jews, especially young Jews in America, are not intimidated by this nonsense that you have to support Israel or otherwise another Holocaust will come. They can see very clearly that the Israeli state is a mirror image in many ways of the Nazi state. The Israeli state is an ethno-nationalist state built on the idea that if you're Jewish, you have all the rights, and if you're non-Jewish, you have that which you're given. And the same was in Germany. You know, the only people who counted were so-called Aryans. Jews were, well, firstly second class, and then were excluded or exterminated altogether. The same process is happening, ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And if you can't ethnically cleanse them, you wipe them out. And Zionist politicians are talking about that from Netanyahu downwards. And that's partly, if I can introduce it, why I wrote this book, which I recommend to your readers or observers, Zionism During the Holocaust. And you can order it from me. My name, Tony Greenstein, 104@gmail.com. It's about the Zionist record during the Holocaust. The Zionists didn't want to know. Zionism and anti-Semitism are really twins of a kind. They're mirror images. The anti-Semites have always said they don't want Jews in their countries. And the Zionists always said, we accept what you say. We don't belong. We belong in our own ghetto state called Israel. And today, Israel is replicating everything that happened in Germany. Remember, Hitler came to power in 1933. The Holocaust was in 1941 onwards. For 8 years, Nazi Germany pursued much the same policies as Israel has been carrying out today. And now we see in Israel ethnic cleansing turning into genocide. So it is extremely serious what's happening. And Zionism is a poisonous racial doctrine, a doctrine of Jewish supremacy. And that's how we should treat it. So it is very inspiring to see many young Jews in particular speaking out against attempts to corral them into the apartheid lager.
Indeed, and it's not just young people. I don't know if you saw an article by Naomi Klein, who once again really is one of the great and the good of the liberal Jewish chattering classes in America. Published in The Guardian, we need an exodus from Zionism.
This
Passover, we don't need or want the false idol of Zionism. We want freedom from the project that commits genocide in our name. Now, this really is groundbreaking stuff. You wouldn't have seen this 7 or 8 months ago.
No, I agree. It was a magnificent article. And she was absolutely correct. Zionism has become the false, the golden calf of Judaism. You worship the state and you worship land rather than you worship a God and ideas and so on. And they have taken out from Judaism, and my father was a rabbi, I'm not religious, but I mean, in the Bible it says at least 12 times, welcome the stranger into your house. But Zionism looks to the book of Joshua, not to the books of the prophet, for its inspiration. Zionism is a political movement which uses the Bible in the order to reinforce itself and legitimize itself. But it is, it's a poisonous racial doctrine, and the sooner Jews say goodbye to it and all it encompasses, the better.
Obviously, in the West, we're still saddled with a generation of leaders bought and paid for by the lobby, willingly so. You know, the campaign contributions, AIPAC, all the rest of it. I'm not quite sure what hold they've got over Sunak and Cameron, but surely this can't last. And when the current generation of students and I mean, all people aged under 30 mature to the positions of power, it's going to become increasingly difficult for Zionists to maintain their control of the narrative on the one hand. And secondly, for all the anti-BDS legislation that's passed in various states and that awful bit of legislation that went through the House of Commons, while this genocide was going on, they can't stop people, ordinary people, deciding they want to have nothing to do with Israel and that it is going to be a pariah for the rest of its existence.
Yes, indeed. Israel has made it clear to people what it stands for, and that there is no difference within the Zionist camp between the so-called liberal or Labour Zionists and the revisionist Zionists represented by Netanyahu. Zionism is one continuum because the basis of Zionism is the Jewish state, and that counts more than anything else. But don't mistake, as I say, the tail for the dog. AIPAC gets its power from the fact that it resonates with the imperialist drum. If AIPAC stood out against American interests, it would soon lose that power. It's people like Tom Cotton and all the other Schumer and so on. They know which side their bread is buttered on. And in fact, early after the war, after World War II, the Holocaust was nowhere to be heard of, because it was seen as a communist thing. So people forgot about it very quickly. They brought it out from under the dust covers because it serves their imperial project. And so we must never, ever mistake. I mean, Israel is a horrific state, but it's a horrific state because it's allowed to be by British and American imperialism. They sustain their rabid dog. And if they cut off the funding, it would soon whine and die.
And I think that's Chuck Schumer, even Chuck Schumer.
Yes, it needs to be shot.
Even Chuck Schumer made a speech recently saying that he feared Israel would become a pariah, and his recipe for a solution is to get rid of Netanyahu. But anybody who replaces him is going to be even worse, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, the far right in Israel commands at least 2/3 of the Israeli Jewish vote. And to be quite honest, one of the first people to come out with genocidal statements was the Labour Zionist president, Yitzhak Herzog, who said all of Gordon's are responsible for October the 7th. We don't need to go over the myths of October the 7th now, but Zionism basically weaponized it. They created a false rape narrative, which the New York Times, of course, was happy to run with, but it's now been utterly discredited. And it would seem that the majority of Israeli civilians who died that day were killed by their own forces. They preferred to kill them than to have them taken captive. And we see that now. Israel prefers to kill Palestinians to saving Israeli hostages, because it could save them tomorrow if it declared a ceasefire. Tomorrow. All it has to do is release Palestinian hostages in Israeli jails. So Israel has a solution within its hands.
Which there are 8,000, with several thousand of them having been detained since October the 7th. Tony Greenstein, it's great for you to have joined us tonight on today's News Talk. Where can people find you and your work?
Well, let's say there is this book. You can buy it. It's £12, plus whatever postage if you're outside the UK. Just email me at tonygreenstein104@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for joining us with your excellent insight and wisdom, Tony, and your unique perspective. Thank you, Tony Green.
Yeah, cheers.
We'll be right back after the news with more from Mike Berry.